face down so that his lips are to my ear. "Is that what you're hoping for?" he whispers. "An execution in the arena? A chance to show off your perverted little parlor trick? You think because we haven't killed your dragon yet, you've still got a chance?" He releases my hair and pushes me back. "I'll slit your throat in a windowless room." It's done. The game's up. Thanks to stupid, callow Darius and a funny story he shared over drinks. I hope he feels better now. I hope he finally feels vindicated after I beat him in the arena in front of his adoring fans and family for the spot that should have been his. Ixion's words wash over my numb ears as the hall and the feast fade away. "I'll slit your throat in a windowless room." I'm dead. I'll never see Ayla again, and I'll never know if Lee lived or died. Power's probably dead too. Lee burned, me branded and humiliated, Palor dead, for nothing. And without the arena to save me, I'll be dead for nothing too. "The Clover Court welcomes Her Divine Highness, Freyda Basileon." The whiteness clears. The hall refocuses. The unexpected announcement and its fanfare silences the dining chatter. Princess Freyda makes her way down the central aisle in dragon-riding boots and a flame suit, unaccompanied and unveiled, as all around the room, courtiers hasten to their feet. She stops in front of Ixion, the black of her eyes slowly fading, the protruding veins shrinking down her neck. She speaks with the lingering many voices of the Goliathon.
"My lord Ixion, so good to see you again."
Ixion has risen too, but his eyes are narrowed and his smile is forced.
"Back from Basilia so soon. I had thought you would have a great deal of business to attend to there."
The tone between them is stiffer than it was when last I saw them. As my awareness of the room expands, I realize that the rest of the table strains to listen too.
"Do you mean parlaying the grain shipments? I've spoken with the accountants in Vask. They are deferring your debt a little longer and sending more aid."
"I mean with your fiancé."
Freda's chin jerks up. Her eyes flash black. Only now do I notice the scorches that mark her flame suit. She must have travelled on her Goliathan's back this time, and clearly her journey saw dragonfire.
"If you refer to my brother, you mistitle him. I have no intention to honour the betrothal I was committed to before the Age of Reason. Perhaps he failed to make that clear in your recent correspondence."
"It seems you engender many such misunderstandings about your marital intents."
"Only for those who willfully misunderstand me."
They both seem inclined to keep their voices raised loud enough for the whole table to hear. Ixion's next sally.
"I hope your father's health has not further deteriorated."
"If it has," says Freyda, "it would not change the duty I have to our newest province, Callipolis, and my most cherished viceroy, you."
She smiles at him as if this were not a demotion and offers an ironic curtsy.
"I thank you, nevertheless, for your concern with the technicalities of Basileian succession practices."
She straightens smartly, and ash puffs from her flame suit. "Finally, I understand. Freudrich has ascension requirements just like Ixion.
He needs his sister's hand to take the throne. And if his father's health is fading, he'll need her hand soon. Ixion took the brother's side after Freyda rebuffed him, sent her home to search for grain, and hoped she'd find herself married on the other side. But she got out, came back, and now she's here to stay. Kallipolis isn't just a project of expansion for Freyda. It's a refuge. Ruling our island keeps a sea between her and her brother's marriage suit. If it weren't for her dragon holding my country hostage, I might pity her. Ixion lifts a hand, his lips a line. A place at the table for the princess heir. Rock and I scuttle to sandwich a new table setting at Ixion's right, between him and Dilo Skyfish. Dilo scoots to make room. The lines around his mouth have been plentiful since Ixion asked him about power, and he seems too lost in thought to notice us. When our bustling is finished, I look up to find Freyda's eyes on me. The last time we were in each other's presence, I was disguised as her parlour maid and about to run off with the boy she was attempting to marry. Her eyes meet mine in a flash as Rock takes her mantle. And taking her seat, she speaks to Ixion. Is it appropriate, according to the customs of your people, to ascend to Dryarch Primus without first proving your ranking? Just as you take such kind concerns with the technicalities of my brother's ascension, so too I must concern myself with yours. All pretense of conversation at the high table has by now stopped. Ixion says, My claim on the first ridership is unchallenged. I come to Freyda's side to fill her goblet. I concentrate on minimizing the shaking in my hands. When her fingers lower to my wrist and remain there, I nearly jump. Her touch is slight, but it's enough of a signal that I should not leave her side. And conveniently, the one with rank to challenge you is under arrest. Ixion's goblet settling on polished wood is the only sound at the table. Neither he nor Freyda looks at me, but others do. If you're referring to that thing, Antigone was promoted by Leo's recusal. As you were promoted by Julia's death. Ixion's knuckles are white on his glass. Setting apart that she is standing trial for treason, I think we can all agree that while patricians and even perhaps the occasional lowborn rider might be allowed a chance in a winnowing tournament, to allow the competition of a serf would be like entering the family's dog. Rock's hands spasm as he places Freyda's table settings in front of her. Oh, says Freyda, but I thought it was learned today that she is less your family's dog than your in-law. This can only be a reference to the trial proceedings. At Ixion's stunned look, Freyda says, You didn't think I would ask Betsuna to brief me on everything I've missed before I came to dinner? She waves an uncaring hand in my direction and adds, For all we know, the girl is even now carrying Leo's lawful heir. I have the impression she points this out purely for the enjoyment of watching Ixion twitch. He looks at me now. Show them. Heat creeps from my ruffled collar up my neck as I understand. Show them, or I will. I meet Rock's eyes across the table. He has frozen, his face draining of colour.
but when he shifts his shoulders into the faintest of shrugs, I take strange comfort from it. We're serving the people who deposed us, that shrug says. What's a little more humiliation? I gather my skirt into my fist before the high table. A few gasp at the sight of the brand. Freda, who sits closest, looks at the disfigurement without any change of expression or sound.
This bitch, Ixion says, has not married into my family. Whatever some deed in half-assed might say.
My vision is blurring as my fists curl. Freda says quietly, lower your skirt. I release the hem and take a step backward. One of the Grey Riders snickers. Freda looks at Ixion. I'm declaring a mistrial. Ixion chokes on his wine.
What?
A mistrial. You will allow that woman, Hayne, to participate in the vetting of a new jury without interference. You will allow her to call her own witnesses. And if I hear that you have tampered with the legal proceedings of Antigone's trial in any way again, if I hear that you have so much as laid a finger on her, I will find a different viceroy.
35. Power Saw Eater. Dula. When the time comes to return to the Great Palace and begin preparations for the triple coronation, I find it an unexpected relief to quit the eerie, unchanged Skyfish Summer Palace. Back in the capital, I learn the rest of it. Antigone captured. Leo and his dragon dead. Ayla routed. Ixion can't stop gloating. I can't stop thinking. Surely this is some mad plot. And on the night Freda returns, I spot the linchpin. My hay cousin. Parsival Greylily. Or as Griff calls him, Power. Who has witnessed Antigone Sur Ayla perform whatever summoning feat Darius claims she's capable of, and engineered her capture without mention of it. Griff's bewildered words return to me now with new meaning. But I know Power. Decent fellow. His friends with Antigone. From the look on Ixion's face when he asks me Power's whereabouts at dinner, he's beginning to put the pieces together just as I have. And declaring a mistrial, Freda, Basileian, tells Ixion. I watch Antigone Sur Ayla's crumpled face turn to steel and feel a shiver go down my spine. This isn't over yet. After the feast, in the break between dinner and dancing, I do it the way I've always done, too quickly to second guess myself, before my head has time to catch up with my heart. I return to the Skyfish apartments, and instead of going to mine, I go to my hay cousin's. I find Power slumped in a chair, his head in his hands, dressed for a feast he didn't attend. The furnishings of his room are sparer than a servant's. The glass door onto the dragon perch is ajar. Cold spring air seeping through. Skyfish balconies are narrower, for a narrow breed of dragon, and I find myself wondering if Power's Brutish storm scourge even fits on his. When he looks up and sees I've let myself in, he jumps and lands on his feet.
What the hell?
He says. Knock. Whatever you're planning, I tell him. Ixion either guesses or knows. Turns out I cannot get this traitor instinct out of my veins. But for once, it's not at odds with my family. For once, this treacherous blood is something I share with kin. Parsival Greylily, my uncle's son. The skyfish who rides a storm scourge. For all his posturing, I'm pretty sure he's every bit as much a peasant lover as I am. Decent fellow. Power stares at me. He cocks a brow. I can practically see him summoning an ironic retort. Maybe to accuse me of the treachery he's guilty of, but instead, he goes to the door and looks both ways down the hall before closing and locking it. Does he know you're here? I shake my head. When I tell him what Darius told Ixion, Power curses. Petty little sod, he mutters, returning to the single chair and throwing himself back into it. He never got over Annie beating him in quarterfinals. If Ixion knows Annie's able to summon, she's finished. I remain standing in front of him, my arms folded against the draft. She might not be. Oh? Freyda just insisted on a fair trial. Power's brows contort, and then he bursts out laughing. Well, what do you know? I always wondered what side you were playing for. Power hooks an ankle over a knee and palms his shaved head with a grin. I wondered the same about you. For the wrong side, apparently. I'm pretty sure I always have been. But there's so much good on this wrong side. Filial piety, dragonborn duty, the skyfish summer palace, and the titles that come with it be damned. I would marry for father. I would turn my back on my own love and happiness for the sake of my house. But whatever may be said about my heart, I am done apologizing for following my conscience. I'm not even sure they can be distinguished. I was taught to admire the heroism of my people, to value loyalty and honor. But what is this? What I see in Power, if not the virtues our families claim to lord? You should go, says Power, before they get here. But it's already too late for that. I hear boots outside and shake my head. Then hide on the balcony, Power says. I can't just leave you. You have to. I need you to take word to Norcia when it's time. Neither of us questions that I will. When? The night before the verdict. They'll know what to do. Power turns to face the door. I step onto the narrow balcony and close the glass door behind me. My back against the cold stone, my heart hammering, I listen to the sounds of the door breaking in, of voices through the glass. Orthos is cold and perfunctory. Powers, bored and defiant. Lucian Orthos, you traitorous slug, how are you? You stand accused by the Clover Tribunal of conspiring with the... Power has no time for it. Yeah, you got me. I had a plan with Antigone to rustle up her dragon in the arena. Why? Ixion's voice this time, rising an octave in confusion. Because I'm nuts for her. This sidelines Ixion completely. What? Power sounds pleased with himself. Nuts for her. Head over heels. Would dare to save her in love with her. It's completely unrequited. She and I both know it, and yet here I am, hopelessly, madly in love with Antigone Saw freaking Aela. Standing on the dark balcony outside, my hand over my mouth, I fight a sudden wild desire to laugh. What the hell? Lucian Orthos mutters. That's right, says Power. Wasting my time, wasn't it? There are sounds of a scuffle. I hold my breath. My eyes squeeze shut, though there is only the darkness of the fire mouth to fill them. When I open them, the night is silent and my breath rises in steam. I risk peering through the glass before turning the knob. The soldiers and Ixion are gone. All that's left of power is a trail of blood leading out the door.
36. The retrial. Lee, Norcia. In all my memories of Guardian training, the best part was the moment of launch. Every problem, big or small, faced in your studies, your training, and your life, fell away. The world expanded and narrowed, and then there was nothing but sky. I don't realize, until I begin running drills in Norcia, that I can get that feeling from the ground. When I'm watching the dragons surround Turret Cast and Titan, I don't have to worry about Annie or Miss Palor. I barely think about Ayla curled beside me on the balustrade. I'm so absorbed in the exercise, in the needs of the riders, the corrections I'll make for the next run-through, that I forget myself. I am, in the purest sense, alive. After so many years dreaming of one future, one great joy, this new one feels like a discovery, especially when I see it. Bran's Aurelian squadron attempt to hurl javelins simultaneously, miss the timing by a hair's breadth, and by chance throw in a quick succession. From my vantage point on the viewing balustrade, I'm able to see the javelins putt-putt-putt into the cast one by one, encircling it in a spiral. All this time I've been wondering how javelins could hope to find vital organs on a beast the size of a whale. But now I see it. The formations won't land a fatal blow because they're not designed to. They're designed to trap. When the riders return to the balustrade, I pull Bran Sur Beria aside and indicate his javelin. It's got a slit on the end for a particular form of training rarely used. Can those mock up as harpoons if we get rope? Bran's eyes widen and he nods. Bind the wings, crash the landing, and finish the job on the ground. Of course. With an animal that large, how else would you subdue it? I'll have to rewrite all the drills, because with rope in hand, the order of every rider's throw will matter. Otherwise, the lines will be in knots. But the same principles will apply writing these drills as any other. Simplify the task, scaffold the components, recombine into the complex action. And I've got 24 riders whose ability I can trust to bring it home. We'll be ready when Annie needs it. Change of plans, I tell them. The muscles in my face are stretched into the first grin I've had in days. This one's going to be trickier. Try us, Cor says.
Annie, Callipolis. Hayne is given 3 days to approve a new jury and find witnesses. Freyda orders Master Wellsey to treat my injuries. The battery of ointments and medications he prescribes leaves me more clear-headed than I felt in days, but less certain of my future than ever. With Hayne's new mandate, the trial's looking better than it ever has. But how am I supposed to get into the arena now that Ixion knows about my parlor trick? And where does that put the plan with Lee in Norcia? I sink from these uncertainties into the deepest sleep I've had in a week, and jolt awake when the door to my cell clanks open.
Since you're so in love with her,
someone rolls across the floor. More figures stand silhouetted in the doorway before the grill slams shut. Labored breathing continues in the darkness, and I recognize it from sparring practice. Power? He lets out a low, wheezing laugh.
Antigone.
You all right?
Yeah, I'll be all right.
But it's clear, even in the dim light, he's not. Something dark and viscous drips down his face. He's leaning against the wall, unmoving. I pour water onto a rag and dab his forehead. The cloth comes away black with blood. He's taken a beating, the extent of which I can't tell in this light. Are we busted? I ask.
Not exactly. I covered for the Norsian operation. They think the conspiracy ends with me.
This isn't a solution I'd have thought of. How'd you convince them of that?
Don't worry about it.
But I'm pretty sure I wasn't imagining Ixion's voice as I was waking. Since you're so in love with her. It doesn't take too much extrapolating to guess the narrative power must have resorted to. My eyes are welling, and I'm suddenly glad for the dark. I reach for the blanket that came with the cell and pull it over him. He's either in too much pain or too tired to comment on the mothering.
Final stretch, Commander,
he murmurs. Even after he falls asleep, I sit awake beside him, doing the math. Power's busted, but not dead, which means Ixion sees a use for him yet. And the fact that he's in here with me. I don't like it. But for the 2 days before the retrial, we're left undisturbed. Hain doesn't summon me for further trial prep, so I remain in the cell beside Power, who sleeps most of the time. I slide in and out of dreams that are somewhere far away, windows overlooking the sea, Lee's arms around me, the sound of a sizzling skillet in the morning. I wake and find the arm around me as Power's.
So how was it? He asks.
How was what?
Your vacation with Leo.
He's slurring. Not altogether there, like he's half asleep himself. The physicians tended me, but not him. An ominous sign neither of us has commented on. It wasn't a vacation, I correct automatically. I'm tempted to tell him it was terrible, because that seems like the humane option given his failed romantic history with me and the fact that he's lying incapacitated in a cell for my sake. But the wistfulness beneath his slurring words makes me suspect he wants something else. I once walked through Power's home with him, imagining it was mine. I know how it feels to reach for a life you can't have and try to fit it over your own body like a borrowed coat. It was nice. He's silent, though fingers reach up to brush his eyes. We're lying side by side beneath the blanket, our sides barely touching. I fill the silence with discomfort, reaching for things I can tell him besides the overwhelming memories of Lee. Mostly, I remember his lips fitting mine in that glorious bed. Power probably guesses that part anyway. We went for walks and we ate a lot of shellfish. Ayla. Laid. Power's face rolls toward mine. I think for a second he'll tease. But he just whistles.
First in the fleet, huh? How was that?
My voice comes out threadbare. She was really happy. Now I'm seeing that fire, imagining Lee lost in it, suffocating as flames licked up those walls. He got out. Nigel got him out. What if I can't feel Ayla because I've lost her for good?
Did the house have a terrific stock of ice wine?
Power asks. I have the impression he's nudging the conversation in a safer direction. I clear my throat. Yeah, it did. We had some. I can feel him nodding beside me. The silence stretches,
Something is scratching in the corner, but I know by now not to look. I can't not ask it. How was it, staying here? Power takes so long to answer, I think he's fallen asleep again. He tells the ceiling, "It was Rock or Chrissa. I was scared what they'd do to Chrissa. I'm loyal. I can prove I'm loyal," he said. And this is what it came down to. He swallows wet and thick. I crack the joke lightly because my breath has caught. "Didn't take you for a gentleman." "Was that what I was being?" I kiss him on the cheek, and Power covers his eyes with a hand and rolls away from me. On the third day, the trial resumes, and I leave Power in the cell when I'm summoned. The carriage ride to the vault finds Miranda positively jubilant after being allowed to vet a fresh jury and find her own witnesses. "We've got a fighting chance, Annie. I really think we do. Even without Ayla. Now that everyone knows about my mythical summoning abilities, there seems no point in acting like that wasn't what I was aiming for. Miranda's lip curves as she reaches across to tuck a stray strand of hair behind my ears. I braided it myself today. "You dragon riders," she says, "always lack a sense of nuance about these things. The court of public opinion matters most of all. Without dragon fire to back it up." Power told me that he tapped Dilo Skyfish to relay the relevant information to Norcia in his stead. Originally, the plan was to coincide their fleet's stakeout of the capital with Ayla's return and my execution, so that they could attack the Goliathan directly after I summoned Ayla. I'm not sure how that plan changes if I get gutted in a windowless room. "But," says a tiny voice in my ear that I hardly dare allow myself to consider, "what if you're found innocent?" I know Kallipolis's hatred too well to hope for that, even with Freda's intervention. All the same, there is new lightness in my step as I descend the carriage at the vault this morning. The courtroom within has an audience that's almost entirely changed. New faces have been added to the jury from the upper and lower banks, and even, if I'm not mistaken, from the countryside. In the lead chair of the Inquisition sits not Ixion, but the patrician judge Samander Escross. He makes no unwanted asides about my Highland hygiene today, as he did on our first meeting at the Lycian Ball. Nor does he reference the unexpected moment, at the end of the bunker riots, when he said he'd prefer me as protector designate to Lee. But he does grace me with a small smile.
"Hello, Antigone."
"Hello, Judge Escross." Neither Freda nor Ixion is seen in the courtroom again, but other members of the Clover Court watch from the balcony, and I know that the proceedings will not be kept from Ixion. I'm so unused to fair questioning that it takes me a few sallies to habituate to Escross's method. He doesn't attempt to throw me off or sardonically undercut my answers. Instead, he listens and follows up as if willing to give what I say the benefit of the doubt. We begin with my most notorious interaction with Megara Roper.
"When you questioned Miss Roper during her time of arrest in the vault, did you threaten her family with the dragon's punishment?"
Megara has looked up from her note-taking in the front row, pen lifted like her brow. "Yes, I did." As the whispering breaks out, I add, "It was a hollow threat,
revolutionary law prohibits the dragon's punishment on relatives. But I knew that if I didn't get her cooperation, Megara would face torture. As she told me her mother did, under Atreus. Escros nods at this.
Yes, the Clover Tribunal has become all too familiar with the methods of the Re-Education Committee.
I was not. Revolutionary propaganda was so thorough that even guardians were not informed of the full history of our regime. I only learned about the Southside Massacre when Megara told me about it. Megara's pen is twisting in slow circles between her fingers. I'm pretty sure she stopped writing entirely.
And at the time of the protests, were you invited to join the Passy?
Yes, I refused.
Why?
I think I'm needed here, I told Lee, as we stood in the wreckage of the inner palace after an airstrike had torn open our city and revealed that the greatest atrocities had been committed not by our enemies, but by our superiors. The next day, we were on opposite sides of a barricade. Because I believed that if guardians did not restrain Atreus and the city guard from the inside, we risked a repetition of the Southside Massacre. I repeatedly defied orders from the inner palace in order to de-escalate altercations on the streets during the bunker riots. Hayne rises.
That brings me to our first witness, if it's all right with you, Your Honour.
Hayne's made good use of her 3 days' search. The captain of the Southside City Guard takes the stand and recounts my orders forbidding lethal force. A civilian describes how I saved his life during the riots, using a doused dragon to stand between him and blows from a guard. And then Lotus himself enters the room, a clover on the lapel of his uniform. Before the questioning begins, he confesses to being a member of both the Passy and the Order of the Black Clover, while avoiding my eyes. He looks thinner than I remember, his usually well-groomed hair snarled and overgrown. I have the feeling that whatever decisions he made regarding the Triarchy, he has since regretted.
Antigone allowed the Passy to start a free press, he says, speaking hoarsely as if he has not used his voice in a long time. She was the one who refused to retake the vault the night we seized the people's paper. The funny thing was, we didn't know, so we used that printing to destroy her reputation.
Megara Roper's pen flies across her notes so hastily she has to repeatedly shake her hand out. She keeps her head bent over the paper, but I glimpse her free hand wipe inky tears from her cheeks. Interesting. That night in the cell, Power rouses himself and pushes a bowl of gruel into my hands. It's tasteless and unsalted. But I have an appetite like I haven't in days, and shovel it into my mouth with gusto. I'm most of the way done when I notice what's wrong. Where's yours?
That was all that was provided.
He goes on before I can react.
I already had some.
I'm pretty sure that's a straight-up lie. When I push the remainder toward him, he lifts a hand.
I've just been sitting here. You're the one standing trial.
You're injured.
What, this? It's a scrape.
We reverse haggle our way to Power finishing off maybe a fourth of the bowl, neither of us commenting on the fact that they've rationed the cell as if Power weren't here. He cheers up hearing about today's proceedings.
Roper cried. Well done. Bet that felt a long time coming.
He can't see my smile in the dark. No comment. In our carriage ride the next morning, Miranda shows me the People's Paper with Megara's coverage of the retrial so far. There's been a tonal shift. Roper has to be careful, of course, because while nominally free since the bunker riots, the paper's been an organ of propaganda for the Restoration as much as it ever was for Atreus under my department. But looking between the lines, she's done justice to the accounts from witnesses that put you in a good light yesterday. I wouldn't be surprised if it starts turning the tide. This time, when I step from the carriage, none of the people shouting call me a bitch. I hardly let myself consider it. Rock takes the stand the second day to talk about grain collections after the Medean attack, where I gained a reputation for enforcing the law with ready dragonfire. Widowed, facing a death sentence, with family safe in Norcia and his hometown already burned, he seems to have decided he has nothing left to lose by taking the stand.
Annie and I were the only ones in the Guardian Corps who'd experienced collections as kids,
he says.
We were both serfs under Stormscourge lords in the old order. So, when the time came, we were the ones called up to do it first, and then we had to train the others.
And would you say Antigone enjoyed this business?
Rock lets out a huffing laugh.
You do know how her family died, right? But if they were going to get guardians to do it, we knew someone had to do it right. You botch that, people die. Antigone was as careful as you can be, but I watched it gut her. Of course, at the time, we thought it was for a good cause. Some sort of heroic effort to save the city. We thought that'd be the end of it. We didn't know then that they'd start choosing who got to eat more than others, giving golds more. When we learned that, afterward.
He shakes his head. I can feel my face rippling with the memory. The moment, in the council room when we went from thinking the worst was over to realizing it had only begun. The formula written on the board that would mean certain Kallipolans starved because they were deemed less worthy. All of this horror, and our job to enforce it. Someone in the courtroom blows their nose. In the cell that evening, Power pushes the gruel into my hands, claiming he was fed lunch. I know it's a lie, but I'm so hungry I can't bring myself to argue with him. After, I sink into uneasy dreams. There are fires and hatchlings, and Lee in the kitchen of the big house, laughing as he takes my waist with hands soapy from dishwater. Freda Basileon points at my belly. See? I said she was with child. When I wake and strain to remember the plan we have with Norcia and challenge I still need to make against Ixion, the reasons I'm in this cell flake like ash. I could have stayed in Farhall in his arms. He's dead! The fear tears out of me, though I intend to hold it in. I know he's dead! It's impossible to know from the narrow window above whether it's the middle of the night or near morning. Power's arms are around me, every muscle in his body taut. We lie in the same unforgiving darkness. What about that plan with the gardener?
Groundskeeper.
Yeah, so? He's not dead.
Power sounds like he's speaking through a locked jaw. But all I can see is that fire. The rest of the dream is clinging to me,
unwanted, the idea Freyda breathed into life. The Traviton, the eggs. Lee's insisting we be careful until the night I said I wanted everything in the world with him and we weren't. What if I'm pregnant? I hadn't meant to wonder it aloud.
Power sits bolt upright. Is that likely?
He splutters.
I have no idea.
I haven't menstruated since I went on the suppressants years ago. I have no idea when they wore off, or what the likelihood is after a night of indiscretion that I might be. What if he's dead, and I'm pregnant with his child? Power rolls onto his knees, facing me. His voice takes the tone of challenge he used when we trained together on the Eyrie, and he goaded me to find my anger.
So, what if you are? I feel as though I'm untethered from myself, adrift and unable to find the line back. My head is in my hands.
Then I'm just one more stupid peasant woman. Just like Ixion and his branding want me to be. Not the sort of girl who rides dragons or defends the revolution or deserves any better titles than the ones they've given her. I thought I could come here and prove something in the arena with my low birth, the peasant blood in my veins. And yet here I am standing trial before my country as commander of the aerial fleet, but dreaming about a kitchen.
Power's voice rises. Like your mum. Like mine. I'd rather be like them than that excuse for a human being who was my father.
His voice is shaking. He's talking about his birth parents.
Some of the bravest women in our lives have been peasant women, Annie. They're why we're here. Even if they go unsung.
I lift my head from my hands to find him glaring at me with such fury that I don't blink despite prickling eyes. I can't feel Ayla. His eyes widen. His lips part. I haven't felt her since I shut her out after the fire. For a moment, the cell is so quiet. We hear the ceiling drip. Power says,
I'm sure it's just a fluke. You'll feel her.
But the doubts linger. What if the bond's broken? What if I'm not a dragon rider anymore? I've never renounced Ayla before. I've never been so far from her for so long. I don't know if I'll ever feel her again. And in my darkest moments, when I dream about Lee's arms in the big house, I'm not sure I want to. The third and final day, a woman takes the stand whose face I recognize. Her hands shake. Her skin is veined and aged beyond its years. Her hair frazzled. Her accent is thick with Cheapside, and when she speaks, she avoids my eyes.
When I was in line for my share, she says, this winter, I'd lost my ration card. There was a long queue, winding around the square, and I told the guard. He looked at her for permission, and she shook her head. And I lost my head. The babes were so hungry. I shouted at her, called her all the things we do call her, you know, in her face. She didn't move. A dragon didn't move. My friends told me to get out of there before it did. Well, round the corner, one of her riders found me, bit of an attitude on him. You'd better be glad the First Rider is more patient with insults than I am. Then he gave me a new ration card. I hardly believed it at the time, but I've got friends say that happened to them too. She always did it quiet. I remember that day. I remember sending Power after her while I waited in shame under the furious eyes of the square. But I did not know until now what he told her when he replaced her ration card. I want to ride a dragon when I grow up, like you. I'll be First Rider. It's not an easy job. I only realize after the woman's done testifying that tears are coursing down my face. I'm not scared, Becca says in my memory, and holds out my armor like she's reminding me how to put it on. At the end of the day, Miranda's arm is the one that folds tightly into mine to help me from the platform. There haven't been shackles since Freda intervened. A hand reaches out from the aisle where passing to touch my sleeve. Take courage, darling, says the elderly juror it belongs to. Oh, thanks. Miranda smiles at him and steers me on, her smile only growing. I knew it. I knew we had a chance. Tomorrow, the jury convenes without me to make their decision. This is, I hope, the last time I'll ever see this courtroom. We spill out into the yard before the vault to find a different scene taking place. The city guard is shoving a shouting crowd back from the gates. An unmarked, windowless carriage is hurtling out the drive. Miranda stops dead. That's an arrest, she says. Who? Oh, dragons above. They couldn't possibly. She elbows her way to the nearest guard and, after a short conversation, makes her way back to me with the smile wiped from her face. They took Megara. What? Why? Charges of collusion with the enemy. Her romantic history with Cor Sutter has been a liability from the start. That doesn't make sense. Cor and his whole family are long gone. But why now? Hayne's lips tighten. Because Ixion is issuing a warning to our jury.
37. The Kallipolan Resistance. Griff, Norcia. I'll admit, I wasn't expecting to see his handsome mug again, and I certainly wasn't expecting to see it like this. D'Lo bursts into my study spewing rainwater like a drowned otter and shivering to his toes in the dead of night. I come as a representative of the Kallipolan Resistance, he starts, like a prepared recitation, and then stops. Hello, Becca. Hello, D'Lo, says Becca beside me. D'Lo wavers. Shouldn't you be in bed? I find it a little rich that D'Lo Skyfish came halfway across the sea to criticize Becca's bedtime, but his face is pretty as ever, and that's something. She had a nightmare. I drew the queen and the star springs, see? She holds the drawing up. I can tell D'Lo's trying to figure out what's stars and what's water. There are a lot of blobs for dragons, and some extra colors for the auroras, the springs, and the constellation that I'll admit I'm pretty impressed with. She got all the queen's dots in the right spots. I've never heard of the star springs, D'Lo says. It's where the dragons go, Becca says. The queen leads them there.
Oh?
D'Lo doesn't seem about to share what he once told me, that in dragonborn lore, dragons make their exodus north to die. I shift weight, depositing Becca onto her feet. It's an old Norsian legend. D'Lo's right. You should be in bed. When she goes, the air leaves with her. We're alone, and there's a very empty sofa between us, and it's night, and Dilo's body is slick with all that rainwater. My mouth's gone dry. You're here on behalf of the resistance? Dilo sounds like he's having trouble keeping track of his sentences, too. Yeah. Kor brought me in off the perimeter. He's going to round up Leo and Krissa. I was recruited by Power Sir Eater. It seems important to note my victory on this point. Told you he was decent. Dilo nods like he hardly hears me. Silence festers, and then he barges into it with a kind of violent airiness. So, you had the King's Moot? Yeah, they picked me. I fail to sound remotely modest about it. Dilo gestures around the stately apartments I've made such a mess of. I figured, given this, congratulations, Your Majesty. I can't decide whether I want to jump out the window or tell him to say it again. I could make it an order. Not crowned yet. Sit. Dilo eases into the chair farthest from me while we wait for Lee and Krissa. He's dripping everywhere. I keep watching the droplets glide down his face. He leans forward and reaches for some of the clutter on the table between us. A few Basilean crowns lie in a pile, and he begins turning the coins through his fingers, making rather a meal of studying them. Your father found you a wife yet? Dilo shakes his head. Still searching. These are newly minted, aren't they? The coins? Maybe. We just had a few trade ships in from Vask. Dragons. What are we even saying? I'm beyond relieved when the door bursts open and Kor stumbles through it, followed by Lee and Krissa, clearly still half asleep. Their mantles are soaked as badly as Dilo's, and beneath them they wear night clothes. The gale that drenched them lashes the window with abandon. Tell me, says Lee. His face is so white, it's practically glowing. Dilo rises, the coin still clutched in his hand. She's alive. She's fine. Lee throws himself into the nearest chair and buries his face in his hands. It's the most emotion I've seen him show since he arrived in Norcia. Krissa sets a hand on his back and rubs slowly while his shoulders shudder. Dilo looks a little unnerved, but at Kor's prompting explains the rest. The retrial, the upcoming verdict, powers being found out along with Annie's summoning ability. But it should still be fine, he says, so long as I help you get Ayla in place beforehand. The verdict will be announced in the throne room, which opens on the Firemouth. They'll secure the main entrances but won't be expecting any sort of inside support. He's really turned cold. Your dad know you're here? I ask. Dilo pulls at a damp coil of hair and offers an indirect answer. Power Sir Eater made a compelling case for following one's conscience. I don't think now's the right time to double check if this affects Dilo's plans to let his father marry him off. Power, Kor repeats. Conscience. He sounds like he's pretty sure those words can't go together. Krissa only hums softly, unsurprised. Lee looks up, dragging a fist across his eyes. And Obazuth? She's nesting on Pytho's keep, ready for you to finish her off. Dilo passes the coin across the table. Something else to be aware of. A chinless face is printed in profile, encircled by Basilic script I can't read. This is the son, Lee realizes, frowning at the crown. Freyda's brother. Dilo nods. Freudric. The dragon on the reverse is Azulith, Obizuth's clutchmate. Lee turns the coin, and a great dragon's face, like Obizuth's but horned all over, glares at us. The God King's dead? Not yet, but if they're minting coins in the visage of the Crown Prince, that means the God King's dragon must already have submitted to Freudric's. The transition has begun. Lee passes me the coin and I turn it back to the prince. The observation comes out before I think to stop it. Friedrich doesn't have a chin. I hear at once how idiotic this comment is. Friedrich can't help his chinlessness. But to my surprise, Lee nods like I've noted something significant. Freda's family tree is shaped like an hourglass. She doesn't have the Basilean chin, but her father and brother do. Friedrich is known to have trouble swallowing, and his seizures can lead to a fair amount of destruction when they spill into his dragon. Not that any of this is his fault, but his determination to marry his sister is. As he realizes we're all staring at him, Lee lifts a shoulder and flushes. Freda and I talked a lot on our walks. Poor Freda, Krissa murmurs. Poor Freda or not, her dragon's menacing Callipoli.